drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of two. I would love to devote more time to creative writing, journaling, and blogging.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, a writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom who is just beginning to learn the ropes of balancing a baby and everything else.
And you are listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Welcome to episode 19 of Chasing Creative. So this year, as I've said on the podcast, one of my personal goals was to get out of the house one Saturday each month. I'd like to think that I'll use these days to get a pedicure or grab lunch with a friend, and maybe I will. But really, I'm probably going to use them to get caught up on work and try and put in some uninterrupted time on my creative projects. And honestly, that's really exciting. So that first Saturday rolled around in January, and it was an almost complete flop, I remember telling Ashley. I left the house frazzled, I didn't have any clear direction for my day, and when I finally grabbed a comfy seat at the library, I had no idea on what to start on first. So I got some work done, but it didn't feel like I was expecting it to feel. It wasn't relaxed or calm, and it wasn't a respite from the daily chores of homemaking and baby raising like I wanted it to be. So I'm headed out again this Saturday, and this time I am prepared. Earlier this week, I sat down and read Jenny Moraitis's The Creative Retreat Workbook, and whoa, I should have read it before that first Saturday in January. Jenny's handbook walks you through preparing for a creative retreat, both mentally and physically. She's got advice for how to plan your retreat, and even a supply list for what to take. I know that this Saturday, I'm going to both spend my time better and feel better at the end of the day, too, mostly thanks to Jenny's advice in the workbook.
In the Creative Retreat Workbook, there are activities to get your creative juices flowing and blank pages to do idea dumps when you need them. It's a planning resource and coloring book combined, and it's full of Jenny's signature adorable doodles, which I love and am very jealous of. And I may be a little bit biased because I worked with Jenny to edit the Creative Retreat Workbook, but this is a resource that I recommend to people over and over again in my real life. Not only is it gorgeous and full of Jenny's happy illustrations, but there are so many practical solutions for real people trying to squeeze creativity into their lives in an actionable way that's rejuvenating instead of stressful.
One thing that really stood out to me is that there's also a section for how to bring that retreat feeling home with you. If you're anything like me, that rested, rejuvenated feeling you get when you spend time by yourself often disappears as soon as you walk through the door. Yes, real life does have to interrupt that lovely feeling at some point, but there are a few ways to dip back into it in your everyday rather than having to wait a whole month or more.
If you struggle to make the time that you have available for your creative projects to count, this workbook can help. It'll walk you through why you want to take a retreat, how to get started, and how to keep the magic flowing even once you come back home. You can grab a copy at makeretreat.com or by visiting the show notes for this episode at chasingcreative.com/retreat.
Welcome to Season 4, Episode 19 of the Chasing Creative Podcast. Today we are chatting all about our ideal creative retreats. So we all have this wonderful longing for a peaceful creative retreat in a cabin in the mountains. I'm pretty sure that every creative everywhere would say, like, yes, that is on the top of my list. Hours upon hours of uninterrupted time, beautiful views, no traffic noises. We could definitely get behind that. The fact is, our mountaintop creative moments don't happen all that often, and we probably need to dream a little closer to our own back doors if we're ever going to make creative retreats happen in our own lives. So today, we're talking about those retreats, the dreamy ideal ones, and the actual real ones. So, what do you look for, Ashley, in a creative retreat in this season of your life?
So right now, I'm not terribly picky. The only requirement I have is that I really want it to be quiet. because I am surrounded by interruptions from, you know, the kids for the most part, but even sometimes Jacob to some extent, and even like more distracting the aspects of being online. So like popping in and checking your email and checking in on social media. And so not only just like quiet the way we normally think about it, but also like a mental quiet, like sort of a space and a disconnect away from your everyday life so that you can really get in the creative zone, so to speak.
Yes. I think that is the perfect way to describe it. My first thing on my list was no interruptions. that is the dream. Otherwise, I think all I need is really a comfortable seat, a place to write, and people to watch, but ones that won't talk to me.
Yes.
That is important.
Yeah. Is that any different from what you would have wanted from a creative retreat in the past? Like maybe before you had Arthur, or you were still working a day job?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe a creative retreat in the past would have involved like more people interaction, like maybe go with a friend or do lunch or something first. And now I think I pretty much just want to like walk out the door and go somewhere and get started. I don't want to, you know, spend any of that precious time doing anything but work.
Yes, I totally agree. I think that when I was younger, and maybe even when I was in college, I would have looked for some sort of a retreat that was a little bit more structured and maybe that had like a mentorship component to it or like a group feedback session where, you know, you all go off on your own and then you come back and do some workshopping. And I don't know if that was just because like I didn't really know how to be a writer at that point, and so I felt like I needed more guidance, or if it's just like I was more in a place where I wanted that creative community surrounding me all the time. But now it's definitely like, no, I just need time to work things through and to process things and my own mental space that I currently do not have very much of in everyday life.
Yeah. And I think that's so much a part of figuring out like who you are and how you work. Whereas when you're younger, you're trying to like figure out how everyone else does it and whether or not you should do it the same way. And instead, I think we're both far enough along in our careers and our creative work that we're just kind of like, okay, I know what I need to do. Now just everything else get out of the way.
Yeah, that's true. And it's something that can always be changing and evolving too. So, you know, if we looked back on this episode in 10 years, we might find that we're back to wanting something that's a little bit more community-based or that has more people to, you know, work alongside of. But right now that's just not happening. So another thing that is not just happening for most of us is, like you said, those beautiful mountaintop retreats are kind of out of reach for most people, either time-wise or money-wise or both. So what are some of our favorite ways to take mini creative retreats in just a few hours that we can sneak into regular life?
Yeah, that is about all we have these days. So I've been trying really hard to get up a little earlier than Arthur during the week, not on the weekends, that's not happening, so that I can just read and drink even like a half a cup of coffee before I become mom and just like ease into the day a little bit tends to help me. I'm only successful about 50% of the time, but when I do make it happen, it just feels like everything is right in the world. So being able to be a person first really helps my attitude the rest of the day, even if I only spend like 15 or 30 minutes by myself. I don't know what it is that just like kind of helps me charge up for the day. And it makes me feel really productive too if I've read like 15 or 20 pages in a book before I've started changing diapers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to see. I'm always like, I'm so torn about the getting up early in the morning thing because, like, we were talking about this earlier, but I am in the phase of pregnancy where I'm starting to have insomnia. And I woke up at 4:30 this morning and could not get back to sleep. So at like 5:45, I got up and sat down at my desk and basically just went to work because I had a lot of freelance work to get done this week anyway. So it was kind of serendipitous. It worked out. But having that time in the morning to myself was really, really nice. Except I feel like if I ever try to orchestrate that, like I set an alarm a little bit before I think the kids will get up, they always hear me. And I'm always like, no, it wasn't worth it. I should have just stayed in bed. Like, do you ever run into that?
Yes. And that's like the other 50% of the days is, you know, I get up at, you know, 5:45 or 6 o'clock with Scott and Arthur also wakes up at 6 o'clock. And then I'm like, well, that was pointless.
Yeah.
So yeah, those days are kind of a kick in the pants. At least right now, like, he sleeps in a crib, so he doesn't get up until I come and get him. Mm-hmm. So every now and again, like, he doesn't usually wake up screaming. He just, like, wakes up and starts rolling around and playing with his little elephant. So I'm like, okay, 10 minutes to at least wash my face and drink a glass of water, and then I will come get you, child.
Yeah. Yeah, those were the days when they were contained to cribs. Well, Reagan is still in a crib for now, but Hadley will just, like, as soon as she opens the door and comes out, then Reagan's mad that she's stuck there and everybody else is awake partying. Yeah. So that's something that I would definitely like to work in, because I hear other moms talk about their couple minutes in the morning just to themselves, mm-hmm. and it sounds so good, but it's not happening for me right now. And what I do that is, I guess it's kind of similar to this, except it's sort of the... it's not quite the reverse, but I try to set up, like, quiet rest time for everybody in the afternoon. So Reagan is currently taking an afternoon nap. So when she goes down for her nap, and Hadley is, she's usually kind of tired by that point in the day. She won't actually take a nap, but she's definitely crabby. And so I will try to get her to, like, either sit with her books or sit and do some coloring, or sometimes if I really just want to be by myself, I'm like, yes, watch an episode of PBS children's programming, because that's fine. Every now and then, it's not going to hurt you. And I will take that, like, 15, 20 minutes, which is all it usually is. Like, that's the most I can ever get out of her. But, like, 15 or 20 minutes where I'm just like, okay, I'm going to sit here and either read a book or journal. And sometimes I do both, but it's such a short amount of time that I usually have to pick and choose. And that has been really nice. It's like this tiny little bright spot in my day that I am always so excited about. And it's not really a time where much productive work happens, but I would like to think that a lot of creative juices get flowing, or maybe at least stay sparked during those few little moments I'm able to grab.
Yeah, I like that. Quiet time for small children, I think, is essential to everybody's happiness. Mm-hmm. That's a good practice to instill in all of our children, is like, you can be by yourself for a little while.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm glad you get that little, like, reset button most days. That does help. I was going to say, one way that I got an impromptu, I'm going to call it a creative retreat for lack of a better word, is a few weeks ago, Scott could just tell that I was drowning in work and that I really needed some more time than what Arthur was allowing me for naps. And so when we got from church, he handled getting Arthur down for his nap and told me to just go to my office. He's like, I got Arthur, you go do work. It's like, okay. And so other than me, like, taking a quick break to feed Arthur later that day, Scott kind of handled baby duty and dinner duty. He even, like, put dinner together.
Nice.
The entire rest of the afternoon while watching the baby, which is no feat, as we all know. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, just handled everything. And then I got to spend, like, 2 solid hours on work that I normally would not get to spend on a Sunday afternoon. And I felt so much better when it was done that I could actually, like, focus on life again. And so it was kind of an impromptu little creative retreat that I didn't even orchestrate, and it helped so much. So I would say that if there is someone in your life who can take off some of the responsibility on you, even just for one afternoon, to help you get caught up or get ahead, or even just have some uninterrupted time, I would encourage you to take advantage of it. Even if it's not your ideal time, the afternoon is not my ideal working time, but I made it work.
Yeah, I totally agree. And how awesome that Scott was willing to do that and was like, no, I can tell that you need help. Like, that's amazing. Yeah. And yet another reason that we need to be open and communicating with the people that we live with about the things that we need so that they can support us in ways like that.
It probably helped that it was crappy outside. So he's like, I'm not going to do anything there anyway.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. And I have childcare once a week in the form of my mom. She doesn't work on Fridays, so the kids go over there that day. And it's kind of a toss up of a day. What it ends up being is usually really rushed, because that's when I have to schedule all my appointments and run any errands that I don't want to take the kids with on, and try to squeeze in all this freelance work. But in an ideal world, maybe someday when the kids are a little bit older, I would really like to be able to take Fridays, like say that they're in school full time. I would like to be able to take Fridays as like, no, this is my creative day. And just sort of block that off as I'm going to take at least an hour or two out of my day at the end of the week to work on some sort of creative project, whatever that may be, no matter how productive or unproductive it technically is. Because that's what Fridays used to be back when I only had Hadley and when she napped regularly and consistently and I was able to get my freelance work done throughout the week. Now, so much of my work is crammed into Fridays that it's kind of become this rushed, hectic thing that's really not that good. But it is what it is for now, and I'm hoping to maybe get that back someday because I had a little taste of what that was like and I loved it.
Yes, that is hope for the future right there. Mm-hmm. I would take it. But like you said, having kind of that end of the week when you're kind of burnt out on everything else to be able to set aside a few hours, like you said, even just one or two, and spend some time on yourself, that is always a wonderful feeling.
Yes, totally agreed. So if we could create this ideal creative retreat, you know, where would we go? Who would or wouldn't go with us? What types of projects could we focus on? Like, if we could plan the perfect retreat, what would it look like?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that both of us would leave our children at home.
Yes, definitely.
That was a very fast yes, Ashley. I told Scott fairly early on after Arthur was born that once I was done nursing a small baby, I was going to check myself into a hotel for 2 full days and sleep as much as I wanted, order room service, and read books all day.
Nice.
And that I might also write a bit if I felt like it. And that was mostly like that 6-week sleep deprivation in the moment talking, but the idea still holds up, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So my actual, probably, like if I put some thought into it, creative retreat would probably be to head to a new to me city that's not really far away. I don't want to waste all my time in a car or a plane. Probably get a hotel room or an Airbnb and spend the weekend like taking walks without any place to go and grabbing takeout and watching movies that I love and then writing kind of in between it all. And maybe, depending on how long the retreat was, I'd meet up with friends for coffee or dinner and talk about creative projects. And I would definitely take my camera and take all the time that I wanted to kind of stop and snap photos and not have anyone mad that I was taking a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And I think that's pretty standard for everybody, that like you want to be able to feel like you're getting away from your everyday life. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's the beauty of the retreat, is that the mini retreats are wonderful in their own right, you know, getting away to a coffee shop or getting away from your kids for just a couple hours. But that extended time, I feel like, really opens up more of your creative process than you have access to in these tiny little chunks that you can grab. Yes. Here and there when you're always taking care of somebody else.
Yeah. I feel like it was a Hope Writers podcast where Emily Freeman had said that if she gets a chance to, she books writing days where she can get away, even if it's just like down to the coffee shop down the street, back to back. So like a Thursday and a Friday or a Friday and a Saturday. Because mm-hmm. She said that it takes so much less time to get immersed into whatever she's working on day two, that it's almost like booking an entire weekend. And I think that is really smart too. And that's, I think, why I covet that idea of like 2 or 3 days in a row, so that you can get everything set up and get really like deep into something and not have to pull out of it in just 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, there is something a little bit, I don't want to say depressing because that sounds too dramatic, but there's something kind of discouraging about if you have a day to yourself or a full afternoon to yourself and you make this progress and you maybe break through a creative block and you've got some momentum going and then it just grinds to a halt again as soon as you re-enter your real life. And being able to take those couple days in a row and see where you can really go with it and see some actual progress, I think would be really helpful for most people.
Definitely.
Yeah. So as for me, my ideal creative retreat would be pretty similar to yours. I would want to be able to take several days in a row, like you said, And I would probably want to go by myself, although I have talked with my cousin Nikki about the two of us going together because we know that we could like leave each other alone and do our various mm-hmm. creative projects and then like meet up for, you know, dinner or coffee or even just like, okay, now we're allowed to talk to each other again. And then, and then after a little bit, we'd be like, okay, now we're going back to silence.
Yeah.
So she is somebody that I think that I could take a retreat with, but I couldn't do that with everyone for sure. I would have to be very mm-hmm. choosy about which friends I picked for that. Yeah. And then,
well, I feel like you see Nikki often enough that you don't need to like catch up on life when you're together. Whereas I feel yeah. like if you and I went on a creative retreat together, we'd be like, and we need to discuss everything in the span of this next 8 hours.
Yes. So it would be fun, but not terribly good for the creative process, probably.
Yes.
So then I was also thinking it over and I was like, you know, I don't know that I would want to go to a city that I've never been to before or somewhere that I really want to explore because that might just distract me or I might feel like mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm locked away in this hotel room. And then I was like, you know, I don't really like hotel rooms. Like they've always got that like bad lighting and like the kind of junky writing desk. And I was like, in a perfect world. So now this is getting real spendy. We would have a cabin that like
with your own mattress.
Yes. And so it would be like, you know, obviously this would not be like my personal writing cabin. It would be a family cabin that was used for, you know, summer vacations and ice fishing in winter and all that kind of stuff. But I would be able to use it some weekends here and there. And it's just like, you know what? It's mine. The food is there. I know what's going to be there. I know the area and the town. And so you're already acquainted with things. And you don't necessarily feel the pressure to go out and see everything and be a tourist because it's just like a second home, except quiet.
Yes, quiet. And there's no toys on the floor.
Yeah. So that was my thought. And then I think just, and Jenny mentions this in her creative retreat workbook too, but sort of having a plan for your creative retreat, like knowing what you want to do so that you don't get there and then just freeze up or like waste all your time doing things that you didn't mean to do. That's the other benefit of a cabin is they wouldn't generally have Wi-Fi. And so
yeah.
I would not be able to get distracted by social media or even Netflix or something like that. So yeah,
that is fair. I know. I think it's, Ashley Gadd from Coffee and Crumbs had written about how to like DIY your own retreat when you can't afford to go on a big fancy one. And that was one thing she said too, like have a list of three things you want to accomplish. Only three. She said that every retreat she's gone on, she's packed nail polish and has never once painted her nails
yeah.
on her retreat. So
yeah,
I get that.
Just not a priority.
No, but she had a kind of a how-to blog post a little while back about how to put together a DIY retreat as well. And maybe we'll share that link in the show notes.
Yeah.
So yeah. So that would be your ideal creative retreat.
It would be, yeah.
No, money is not an obstacle. You own a cabin.
Well, yeah, in a perfect world. In the real world, my creative retreats are a lot more likely, even if I were more intentional about them right now, they would be a lot more likely to be like, here's my table at the coffee shop, even like twice a month, like every other week or something, and being like, okay, and here's my afternoon where I sit at my table at the coffee shop and I get stuff done. Like that would probably be a more realistic thing for me to do at this point in my life. But, you know, we can dream.
We can. That is what this is all about. So what books would you take with you on your creative retreat?
Yeah, so this was tough because I was trying to pick stuff that would be like inspirational, but not so distracting or so good that I spent mm-hmm. the whole time reading instead of getting actual work done. So for my nonfiction pick, I chose Letters to a Young Poet by Rainier Maria Rilke. I never know if I'm saying that right.
It's such a hard one to say.
I actually looked it up before we got on to chat about this so that I wouldn't sound dumb, and I'm still sounding dumb because I forgot. So
that's okay.
I forgot what I learned like 20 minutes ago. So anyway, but Letters to a Young Poet, if people haven't read it before, is just this nice, slim little book with just general, they are actual letter formats. And they're just really wise inspiration, sort of from like a, you picture like a grandfatherly figure, like bestowing wisdom upon you. Mm-hmm. That's how I picture it anyway. And it's, you know, my copy has my underlines and highlights from past times that I've read through it. And so I was like, you know, that might be nice to have with. It's not something that I know I'm going to be tempted to sit down and read through cover to cover, but, you know, flipping through and finding those couple things that I have highlighted is probably not the worst thing for me if I'm looking for a little bit of encouragement.
Yeah, that is smart. And for that reason, I would have chosen Madeline Lingell's Walking on Water, because it's another one of those like inspirational things, but has like it's nuggets of information. It's not a novel that you're going to read front to back.
Yes, totally agree with that one. And then another one that's good is The War of Art. Yeah, that's it, right? Yes. I'm always like, am I saying that one right? Because I always want to flip it around. Yeah, but that's another good one that's got a lot of good nuggets of inspiration. And that one really has a lot of kick in the pants to like, no, you just need to do this. You just need to get this done. So just in case your motivation was sort of lagging behind, that might be a good one to have on hand to be like, no, you have to do this.
Yes, I think I described Pressfield's book as like Anne Lamott, but as a bully.
Yes, exactly.
He's just a little meaner than Anne Lamott. And Anne Lamott isn't afraid of saying like, hey, just do the work. This is what you're supposed to do. But Pressfield is maybe a little bit meaner. Would you take any fiction along with you?
I probably would. I feel like I would want to just bring with whatever I was currently reading just to, I don't know, like have something to dive in and out of if I needed a break, or maybe something, depending on what sort of writing project I was working on, maybe something by an author in the same genre if I wanted to like reference how did they do this or how did they handle that. But then I was like, ultimately, I would probably want to bring one of the Harry Potter books because that's just...
Oh, good choice.
You know, it's comfort reading. It's, you know, it's going to make you happy. It's excellent writing. And mm-hmm. I've read them a million times and I know what happens. And so there is always a risk of getting sucked in, but hopefully I would be able to resist that.
Yeah. I kind of thought along the same lines as far as fiction goes. I would bring like any one of my comfort books that I usually read every year. But I think the one that would fit the best with a creative treat would probably be, did you ever read Lucy Maud Montgomery's The Emily series? So not the Anne of Green Gable that everyone knows and loves, but like Emily of New Moon?
I have not, because I have not even read more than like, I don't know, 50 or 75 pages of the Anne of Green Gables series, because they are too happy and they annoy me.
Oh my goodness. I can totally see that. No. I can totally see where Anne would be absolutely like chipper and ridiculous to you. But Emily of New Moon, so it's a series of three books that Montgomery wrote, and in it, like the girl is, I would say, moodier than Anne Shirley, now that you say that. Like, she's got a little bit more of a chip on her shoulder, but she desperately wants to be a writer, and her greatest sin is that she uses too many italics in her writing, and her teacher yells at her all the time. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that is me. So the Emily books, I would probably take those, because they're fun to dip in and out of and, like, see the angst of a young writer laid out on the page like that.
Yeah, those do sound cute. I mean, I'm probably still not going to read them, but I can see how they'd be appealing for somebody who's working on their own writing.
Oh, I love that. Anne is too chipper.
I know. I'm a weird, depressing reader.
Hey, to each their own. But, well, I think that's all we have on creative retreats. So we would love to hear what your guys' ideal creative retreat would be. So you can send us an email. We'd love to hear from you at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com. Or you could share your ideas using the hashtag chasingcreative on Twitter or Instagram. And we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you'd like to help us bring this podcast to life each week, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/chasingcreative.
And if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.